This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950 Radio. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Matt Patrick here today. A lot to get to today. It's my pleasure to welcome on Jack Rice. JackRiceLaw.com. JackRiceLaw.com. I'm bringing in Jack today. We want to talk about the 1-6 Commission, because what I want to get from Jack is how you set this up as a trial lawyer. I want to set this up to every one of these scumbags goes to jail, and I think they've actually done a pretty good job after day one. Jack, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
No, it's great to be with you again, Matt.
Thank you very much. First of all, it is interesting the way they set this up. I know that the Republicans are trying desperately to delegitimize the commission by saying, oh, well, they didn't take our people. And they apparently last night they tried some procedural motion in the House to get the Jim Jordans and the rest of them installed. It did not work. The reality is they've painted themselves into their own corner. You don't basically give up your own defense, but because they had the chance twice to make this a bipartisan commission, but twice they did not do so. And Liz Cheney and Kinzinger being on that commission, that takes a lot of wind out of their sails.
No, it certainly does. When we really look at an investigation like this, what the House Select Committee is doing, I think what makes this so important is what we had with this first piece of the investigation is these four police officers who appeared before the committee. I mean, the power with which they present themselves, what they talked about, the brutality of what they faced. The thing is I don't care who you are. Philosophically, you can be as right, and you look into the eyes of these people. I think it's very clear that what happened to them happened to them. Now, you may want to talk about all sorts of other things, and you may try to do that, but what you don't get to do is that somehow this was, as Donald Trump put it, a loving crowd. And I believe the quote from one of those officers was, I'm still recovering from those hugs and kisses.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I do like how this started off, because we have to reestablish the solemn nature of what exactly did happen. It's amazing to me how the right and the Trump supporters who do want to downplay this have actually been able to really change the narrative of this. I mean, they're screaming it a lot. I'm a veteran. There's no way in the world I'm ever going to forget what these guys did. But there's a lot of people, especially in the media, they've been able to change this. Have you ever been part of a trial where you look at it and you say, okay, this is pretty open and shut case, and yet, you know, the entire narrative seems to be changing? I like how they established this today. It seemed to be bringing this back. This wasn't a tourist group. This wasn't just harmless fun. This was actually a very serious incursion against this government and an attempt to overthrow the government. And the reality is that there's a lot of questions that we need to answer on that.
Yeah, there is no question. Again, I think about this as a former prosecutor, as a criminal defense lawyer. I mean, I think about how I approach any criminal defense case. If they're charging a crime, the real question is do you attack the facts of the case, or is there a way to pivot those facts and to characterize them as something else, right? So that's what the Republicans have tried to do in this case, because obviously the outcome, those people involved, those were their people. And because they were their people, then you need to pivot those facts and make the argument that they weren't what the facts clearly are in this case. And I mean, it's clear when you talked about this as being a veteran, and I've been working with the military for decades and decades.
Yes.
When you look at dozens of military personnel who were part of this mob, part of the insurrection, 15 police officers, part of the insurrection. And, you know, by the way, that is one of the things that the House Select Committee is going to look at. It's not just a question of motive and what drove this. They're also going to be looking at this question of security for this one. But I think a critical piece of this is, how is it that we have actual police officers, actual military personnel who've sworn an oath to protect the United States of America, to be warped to such a degree that they're willing to actually go in and attack the very thing they swear to uphold?
Well, and you bring up what's an interesting point about that is I was just reading about the cop that they got in Florida. He used to be a New York cop. They call him eye gouge guy. I mean, the sedition right. hunters have caught him, and he keeps trying to make it. He clearly thinks that we're all stupid. He now says, "Well, I wasn't gouging his eyes out. I was basically doing a hockey maneuver," and it was kind of one of those things where. There just seems to be this belligerence that either they understand that they were bad, and there have been some people who have pleaded with the charges that have been filed there, and there are actually a lot of people that are looking for deals right now because they realize this is not going to go well. But that belligerence, especially of the military people, the police people, some of the politicians that showed up as well, some of the guys from Michigan and stuff, this was not what you don't ignore all the video, ignore what you see behind the curtain. The reality is we're going to tell you what it is, and they just don't seem to understand. No one's buying, especially now that this commission is going.
Yeah, well, there's the feint. I mean, the feint is to try to pivot those people outside of the facts and to make an alternative set of facts, dare we dare say it. But if we think about what we have going is there's multiple parallel investigations going on. We see the House Select Committee, which we're seeing right now, and I think they did an excellent first day.
Yes.
We also have those federal investigations taking place. 543 people charged. As of date, they're still trying to ID some 300 of those people. We've also seen a lot of those people guilty already. So you're starting to see larger numbers do that. We've only had about three people sentenced at this point. But if you know, one of the things that I think is really important, of the 23 that have pled guilty, we find that several of those are the so-called oath keepers.
Mm-hmm.
And they've agreed to cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
And see, why that's so important is the conspiratorial aspect of this. This is the prosecution question you asked. How do you do this? The real purpose is to drive up that chain and say, who are those who organized and drove these operations? That's also going to be a very big part of what the House Select Committee is doing, because it's not just the goofy foot soldier who does goofy things. I agree. They're responsible for their own acts. However, it's those people who are in the planning levels, who dealt with the logistics, who dealt with planning, who dealt with the actual organizational front that took place to drive in from multiple directions to push the cops certain ways and to do those very specific acts and drive all of those 543 already charged, more than 300 who haven't been identified. Who's driving those people? That's what's critical.
And let's bring up the other bombshell from this morning. This actually happened right around the time the commission started. The Justice Department notified last week they could testify to the various committees investigating Trump administration efforts to subvert the results of the presidential election on the January 6th attack. According to a letter obtained by the New York Times, witnesses can give unrestricted testimony to the House Reform Committee and the Senate Judiciary Committee. The department said both panels are scrutinizing the bid by officials by the Trump White House to force Justice Department to undermine President Biden's victory. The fact that they were trying to, what the Justice Department is saying is they basically, because it was trying to undermine a legitimate election, that the Justice Department does not recognize presidential, preference in regards to that they won't testify, that they've said, no, you can go if you got a call from the White House saying undermine this election, you can go testify. And that's a pretty big deal.
No, it's massive. It's actually maybe some of the biggest of all, because this goes to motive. What drives people to do the things that they did? What were they hearing? What were they being told? And what made them do those decisions? We're starting to see more and more people moving. And I mean, the people involved here who are acknowledging being in a very brutal place. Well, you and I have discussed multiple times in the past how it is that you can use technology to do facial recognition and identification. First of all, it's not hard at all when you have people basically posting videos of themselves driving through the Capitol on Facebook.
Yes.
I mean, you make it pretty easy when it's Joe Schmo who actually goes there and he says, look what I'm doing. Yeah, well, great. He shouldn't be so hard to find. But now the question is, who drove Joe Schmo? And were you getting calls from the White House? And were there other people in Congress who were actually a piece of this issue? This creates that broader question of the conspiracy. That's what they're looking at now.
And one of the things we should also say, and I think one of the reasons why you see people, some of the House Republicans particularly, who are really against this, is they know they're going to have some uncomfortable days ahead when all of a sudden they have to explain how they were, what, you know, their own actions. How likely is it, do you think, we're going to see actual charges come off of this investigation towards whether White House officials, Defense Department officials, who clearly have a lot of questions to ask, answer, as well as also clearly, I mean, Mo Brooks has already said, well, I was just doing what the president told me, that he's already pulling the Nuremberg defense. And so you've really got, I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, Mo Brooks, you know, Biggs, you've got a lot of these people who are out there that are, they know that they've got some questionable things on there. How far do you think this is going to reach?
Well, I think that's what makes this interesting, is if we think about what the House Select Committee is doing and how this is different than what the Bureau does, how this is different than what the feds are doing in this case, is that who they're going to get to testify and what they can get from them. Actually, you can subpoena people with broader, with a broader narrative who can actually come in and provide evidence. And that evidence itself then gets transferred over to the federal side. So what you can potentially see is much, much more. I think what makes it so hard, though, what makes it so difficult, first of all, it's hard to get people on the conspiracy side of this. If you note, the people who are being found guilty, there are some 165 of them have been charged with assaulting police officers. The thing is it's sometimes easier to get those things with the video about what they did rather than what motivates them to do it. That's why the concept of an insurrection is such a hard conviction to go for, this sort of traitorous act rather than this guy walked down this hallway. And that's part of it. But I think if we think in the broader sense and we think about what we're doing, the real uncomfortable part, as you just described it, for the Republicans is this. For decades and decades, they've championed themselves as the Law and Order Party. They championed themselves as the party of the police. When you have four police officers, as credibly as they did, come in and testify as to what happened to them and how they still hear the chants of murder in their ears when they sleep at night, and you have the Republicans lining up saying that this was a loving crowd, it just doesn't reconcile. Yes, you will always have the crazies on your side, because there's always crazies out there.
Yeah.
But you're going to get a whole bunch of people who are in that moderate group, including some conservatives, who will say, this is not what I signed up for. And I think that is what is important in the investigations themselves.
And this is the part which makes me mad when we get to kind of general elections, is the way that the media allows these zealots, these extremists that are politicians, to redefine themselves and don't say, wait a minute here, weren't you basically on the side of the 1-6 insurrectionists? And they, right. Well, I don't know where you got that idea. And they were able to do that because they're able to try to bury that their actual reality of who they are.
Well, that's part of one of the problems we have with the media in general. For whatever reason, they chase the bright, shiny penny.
Yes, they do.
This is about something bigger.
I want to get back. You brought up the idea of the charges of an insurrection. I want to bring up specifically policeman Daniel Hodges. He was the one that had the exceptional answer to Jamie Raskin's question when he called these people. These were terrorists. And he actually read the textbook definition of what terrorism is and terrorist is. And it matches perfectly exactly who these people were that were there on 1-6. I don't know if you understand the legal nuances of D.C. itself, because there are some quirks there. But obviously,
oh, my goodness.
But when you do get to the clarification, I mean, is there a way to actually clarify these? Oh, no, this wasn't just a rally. These weren't just fans. We are basically, you are now a terrorist, which means we can charge you in a different light, in a different manner, in a different court. Is there a way to do that? Do you know?
Well, that's actually what they're working on. And that's the big picture issue. So realize, you may look at this and people may see this and see some people who are just walking, right? So, for instance, there's only been three people sentenced. One guy on a felony was sentenced to 8 months. One person on a misdemeanor got 3 years of probation, not a day. Another person, he got 6 months, but he'd already served basically the 6 months. And so it was relatively inconsequential. What you may start seeing here is you may start seeing quite a few people, it appears that they're walking. But the real thing is what we really want is – we want sort of collectively as a society is we want to get a brighter, bigger picture and lower hanging fruit, the more inconsequential players. We want their story. We want who drove them, what planning they received, who were the logistical masterminds behind that. that's what you're always going for. I mean, I can take you back to what was going on in Guantanamo, when we can think about what the efforts were, let alone we can ignore the failures of it. But I mean, in the sense of what as an interrogation piece, what you're really trying to do is always run up that chain. Hence, you're trying to take down the mob. You're not going after soldiers on the lowest rung. They're important. You want them off the street. But what you really want is you want mob bosses. What we're looking for right now are mob bosses.
I want to end with where you brought up the fact that the four officers' testimony, there is just a disgusting element of the far right now who not only are lashing out at Liz Cheney and Kinzinger, and if I can actually make a quick point about them, I have to give them both a lot of credit. I don't agree with them with politics, but both of them showed up, were very clear, I am here because this is beyond politics. And I was very touched when both Cheney and Kinzinger went down and gave a hug to the police officers and let them know that this is, you know, we're not, if Jim Jordan was there, he'd be screaming in their face. And this is the fact that they are taking this seriously is a very encouraging thing. But the attacks against those two aside, the right now is going after these officers. They're claiming they're bad cops. They're claiming they were right to be convinced that they were not cops. They were Antifa. That's why they were attacked. The reality is that these brave men were set up. They were just not there. They did not have the support staff. They were whatever the reason, and we're going to find out why they were so understaffed, undermanned, and underprepared, which is not them. It was the other people, and particularly the Department of Defense. But once again, let's go back to what you said. The testimony from those four today was very straightforward. They've been wanting to talk, and they had their opportunity, and they did not miss a beat.
Well, contemplate two pieces to that. Let's start with Cheney and Kinzinger, and your point is absolutely perfect. And yet, think about this. If you really think about where they are, is it really a winning situation for them in any sense of the word? Let's think about this, and you'll get people on the left coming and saying, wow, they're so brave. Look what they did. Are they going to vote for them? Honestly.
Not really.
Because you're not going to get people on the right vote for them. So the question is, how do you pay back those who do something right? Now, you could make the argument that so much of what they did wrong is why we're here in the first place. On the other hand, doesn't that just perpetuate them continuing to do wrong things? Why would they bother to do something worthy? And shouldn't you at least acknowledge that worth? Or do you simply say, well, we just got to knock them out? Because you know what the right's going to do. The right's going to fight the other direction. So you're almost guaranteeing that they lose. I mean, that's a question for the left, which I think we all have to struggle with. Now, the other question, which has left my mind now. I can't remember what
about the four police officers.
Oh, I don't even know. See, you got me flustered. I started thinking about that piece, and that's a piece that really will stick with me too, because it's a hard place to be. I mean, we've seen this before, where you cheer when you'll have the right members of Congress, House or Senate do the right things, but they're not in your party. Do you support them when it matters to them because you should reward them for making the right decisions? Or do you say, well, you know what, you're not my guy anyway, so who cares? And then you're stuck with the very same problem. It's something I think we kind of all have to think about, because it's not easy. I know that too.
And you know, I think about, you know, the thing I thought about with the four officers today when they started off was, you know, you and I, we've watched, you always have some clown out in some place who says that he got into a conflict and it never really happened. And all of a sudden some security footage exposes him for lying and that he really, really was the bad guy. It's another thing to see a bunch of people insist, oh, nothing really bad happened. And then you see a guy swinging a hockey stick and an axe handle and bear macing police officers, trying to literally kill them on the Capitol steps, and insist, oh, yeah, that's just tourists. And on video, they themselves posted on social media. You know, there is an element of this, which is, it is deeply sad for America that this is where we're at. And the fact that most of us as a country still haven't, you know, I still think that there is people that are still not as outraged as they need to be about this, because this was almost the end of democracy.
What do you do when a police officer is tased over and over and over again while somebody chants, kill him with his gun?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's good. It's that was day one. I think they're starting to make a case. Let's just put it that way. Jack, I will. And as we go through this, I might call you back and have you come back and give me your expertise on this, if that's okay.
Always, my friend. Always.
JackRiceLaw.com. Jack Rice Law. Best defense lawyer in Minneapolis, St. Paul, by the way. Absolutely stand by Jack Rice. If you need a defense lawyer, JackRiceLaw.com. Jack Rice, kind enough to join us. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. And as I mentioned on Twitter and Facebook, oh, let me just go check the Blue Lives Matter folks. Let's see all their outrage about how these Capitol police officers were. Oh, nothing. Not a peep from the Blue Lives Matter folks. As a matter of fact, some of them even attacking the police officers. It's almost like Blue Lives Matter isn't about cops at all. It's basically a cop-themed political movement that's only used when it's convenient for their political argument. It's kind of like the Christians when they completely ignore the Gospel of Matthew on the right. They want to ignore that, feeding the hungry, taking care of the sick, giving health care to the sick and that sort of thing. They don't want to pay attention to that at all. At all. So it's almost like they're a bunch of heretics. Heretics can go in a lot of different ways. So yesterday, one thing I want to just quickly finish out this half hour with is a revisit of one thing from last night, yesterday's show, where I was talking about how upset I was at the Star Tribune at the coverage of this racist this racist track announcer making these comments down in Iowa, and then the track in Fairmont basically backing up his racist comments and then trying to rebrand them, and how upset I was because the Star Tribune didn't actually go out there and call these guys out like they should have. And there's a term I like to call the crossfiring of American journalism. And I mentioned it yesterday. I explained it greatly, where basically the show Crossfire that used to be on CNN, where you would get belligerent arguments on one side half the time and, you know, the argument based on facts on the other side. And for some reason, we debated this, that, you know, you would say the sun is bright and hot and the other guy goes, no, it's not. It's cold. And and that's kind of really bringing it down to its base level. But you kind of get the point. Used to be that journalists would actually go on out there and start researching the story and do this. And the story, I was very upset because this story, the way it was covered in the Star Tribune, gave the racist not only their initial fraudulent claim a hell of a lot of validity, but then never when they changed that initial fraudulent claim from basically being their justification to say racist crap and endorse racist crap to then basically say, well, it's just about the national anthem. Okay. Anyway, the reason why I'm bringing it up is I got John Renan from The Strib, who wrote the article, got in touch with me. We had a conversation, and I'm going to keep that conversation between us. But I want to make a point about something. And I want to make a point about why it, and this is embarrassing. I'm talking chimp. I am a radio show host. I have taken journalism classes. I have at times had to be a fill-in news guy. But I generally don't do news. So if I am actually at a point where I can kind of see poke holes in how a journalist does the job or a newspaper reports a story, and I'm not saying, and I'm going to just be blunt, I'm not saying it's John. It could very easily be the editors of the Star Tribune who are atrocious. Are atrocious. That newspaper, the editors do not. How do you take that Andy Mannix story from a few weeks ago about burning of evidence at the precinct? How is that just got buried? Dear Lord, that is a huge story, and you guys got that off your front page as fast as you possibly could. So this is not necessarily the writer of the story, and I want to be clear about that. And I'm going to sit down at some point and talk with John privately, and maybe I'll find out what exactly happened here. But I want to just bring up the case of this story, and here's my point. Once again, this racist track announcer got upset because he said, lift every voice and sing a song which has been called the Black National Anthem. Now, quickly, a quick side note. We call songs the Summer Jam of 2021. It doesn't mean that when the Summer Jam of 2021 comes on the radio, you have to stop and start jamming out and dancing to it. There's no legal obligation for you to recognize the jam of 2021 or a song people have called the Black National Anthem as actually a comparable national anthem to the national anthem. And just because someone anoints a name to something doesn't mean that something is all of a sudden is going to be treated at the same level as the got the provenance of the traditional national anthem. That's just not going to happen. And no one is really suggesting this, and that's the end of the day. But if you go back to the original comments from the racist track announcer in the Iowa track, and I'm going to read this to you. I've heard about all the stuff that's going on in the NFL, and now they're going to have another national anthem for those folks. I get the, I guess, darker tone skin color. I'll just say blacks. They want a different national anthem. And so he's saying a definitive. He is saying, and now he does come back and says the NFL is thinking about doing it. So I say shut off the TV. So he's saying that's going to do it. He doesn't himself do any kind of fact checking to determine this is going to happen. But he did definitively say they're going to have another national anthem for those folks, the, I guess, darker tone skin color, I'll just say blacks. So he makes up this story saying the NFL is going to take this and put it on par with the other national anthem, which means white people, you sit down, your national anthem is over. Black people, you stand up, your national anthem is about to begin. No one is going to do that. If I was a journalist, the first call I would make is to the NFL. Now, the NFL is going to tell me one of three things. Yes, we're going to do that, which they wouldn't, because even the NFL is not going to do that. They know that's not, they're not even suggesting it. They're going to play this a la the Lee Greenwood, Proud to be American. They'll play it probably near the national anthem, but it's not going to have the same position, impact, and provenance as the actual national anthem. That's just not going to happen. But they'll play it there as a recognition of the undeniable racial injustice in this country. Absolutely. So the NFL is going to come back and say one of two things. No, we're not going to put this up there on provenance with the national anthem. Or two, well, we're not quite sure. We'll get back to you when we figure that out. Needless to say, what these guys said at the track is not true. And so at that point, if you come back with the NFL, and once again, that's what a journalist would have done, and maybe John did. I don't know what the editors did with this story. But if he did go in the NFL, said, oh, no, we're not going to do that, or we don't know what we're going to do, their entire initial argument is void because they're saying definitives that don't match. And it should be noted that the Fairmont Raceway guy came on out and said he agreed with all of Lon's comments and opinions of the original statement in Iowa, which is basically saying that he agrees with that the NFL is doing this, which they're not. They're not going to have done it, or they're not going to have made a decision, but they're not going to be doing this. Needless to say, their initial argument is just pure garbage. And if you actually found out that fact, and you went and approached them and you challenged them, you negate not only the horribly racist comments that were said at the Iowa track, but then their pathetic attempt to then change their narrative to actually, well, we're here to defend the national anthem, which they don't have to do because this isn't actually going to be on par with the national anthem. That's my point. If you're a journalist, you got that. And when I grew up with journalism, when I went to journalism school, that's what you did. They told you, well, find out the facts and then approach the people that have made the statement. But if you're not going to have the facts and you're not going to approach the people with the statement and say, well, why didn't you do your due diligence and actually find out if that story was true? Or who did you hear it from? Who are you sourced from? And they bring you wildamericaneaglepatriot.com news. Well, then you're going to say, well, did you actually, you know, verify that story was true? I don't have to. But you could just list that, and I think we'd all understand exactly what had happened. Do not give ludicrous arguments, especially ones that are used to go out on racist tirades, validity in the media. Do not do that. That's what our media needs to do is, you know, say, well, this isn't true, so why are we talking about this? And then be done, and embarrass the crap out of these two clowns. Good news is they've already seemed to have done that themselves. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, a lot of other things to get to. Patrick Cooligan from the Minnesota Reformer joining Brett coming up here in a little bit as well. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Patrick, have you been outside at all today? Okay, so I went to the zoo today. This morning I had some time. We dropped off the dog at the groomers, decided, you know what, we're going to head on out. and we go. I took the kids. I said, let's go to the zoo. We haven't been in a while. So we head on down. As I was just walking through the zoo, I could feel the humidity levels rise out there.
When I left this morning, I actually thought it wasn't too bad, but I have not been outside in about 4 hours now.
I did the outdoor trail. I went past the llamas. They've got all these great llamas out there, but you can't see them now because of safety protocols out there. And so, yeah, that was kind of, I could see them through the fence, but, you know, it's a llama. You want to get close. They're cool, man. Anyway, we walked that outdoor thing. I came back. I was just pouring sweat. The tiger, they set up the tiger now. They've got it where it can lie in the pool and get hit by the waterfall. That's exactly where that tiger was. I'm like, dude, move over. I'm coming in. That looks delightful. It was busy out there. And then here, you want the big ripoff at the zoo? I'm not going to say this. I have no problem saying this. I get to the ice cream. They got a good ice cream stand out there by that splash pad. They got a decent ice cream thing. They were out of the only flavor they had left where they had the blue one, which is something, mint, bubblegum, and cherry. I can't do the flavored cherry, the artificially flavored cherry. I can't do that. I went with blue because I wasn't going to go with anything else. Their chocolate was out. Chocolate and strawberry was out. How can you? That's called ill-prepared for a day like today. That was disappointment on my behalf. I was not happy with that. It was packed out there, by the way.
Disappointment in a cup today?
No, it was more of a cone. I didn't do the waffle cone. I just wanted more traditional. I knew that as I was walking with this thing, this was going to melt. So I better if I get the waffle cone, it always seems to have a drizzle spout on it like a gutter. So I decided to go with the traditional, and I made the right call. Although, if you get that ice cream cone, whatever the flavor they served right before yours, at the very bottom of your ice cream cup is a combination of those two. Sometimes it works great. The strawberry chocolate combo, delightful. I had blue and mint, which basically was like me eating a Crest ice cream cone, and it was not tasty. That was the sensation you'd want. Ugh. I will say, as I went on out there, and I'm going to get coronavirus update. We got a lot of stuff to get to on this. The coronavirus update today, I will say this. There were multiple times. I am glad I told my kids, grab a mask because we're going to be going in and out, and I don't know. And, of course, if you've ever done the tropical trail there, and by the way, the Minnesota Zoo, fantastic. Minnesota Zoo is fan-freaking-tastic. Get a membership. Get out there. Have some fun. Animals are cool. That's just that. And ice cream selection aside, I still stand by that zoo and the Como Zoo all day long. The jewels we got in the crown of the Twin Cities. If you get a chance to head on down and go visit the Minnesota Zoo, I highly encourage it. It was pretty busy. And, you know, that splash pad, obviously a lot of kids there. But there are times where you go, like the Tropical Trail, the Russian Coast Trail, just where you get a lot of people are kind of clumped together. I don't know if it was one huge group, but over by the Tonkins was a huge crowd. And we just, you know, we had our masks with us. We're all vaccinated. My entire family is vaccinated. I highly encourage you to get vaccinated. We'll get back to that in a moment. But I could get it and carry it to other people, even though I might not get as sick. I could basically as well. I just think it's, you know, I think one of the things I've learned is considering how low the actual real flu, not the traditional flu that we have, not the coronavirus, was the outbreak of that. I think we've learned that, you know, sometimes it's not the worst thing. If you've got people around that are sick, putting a mask on is not the worst idea. So I had to put that on. It is getting, you know, to a point now where I think we're going to have to start looking at this again because, and as one person said to me, so why are you wearing a mask? I said, well, one, I had a health crisis a few weeks ago, and I'm kind of still kind of going through that, so I'm being careful. He goes, oh, okay, that makes sense. It wasn't belligerent, but I said, and I had no problem adding the next part. I said, and because there's just too many frickin' idiots out there that don't think that vaccines work, even though they work, and they're jeopardizing us all. So that's why I'm wearing a mask. He kind of gave me a look with that one. The COVID update for today, this is courtesy of bringmethenews.com. Tuesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes, and I'm going to scare you here, but reminder, this is, I do believe, the three-day total, all right? Because we've been talking about totals in about the 200, 300 range. Hold your butts. The total today, 1,032 new cases and three new deaths, including a person aged 25 to 29 in Hennepin County. The state's death toll is now 7, 1,656 since the start of the pandemic. That is 3 days. I believe that is the Saturday, Sunday, and Monday totals combined for today's numbers. That gets us up to 1,032. So once again, much higher than it's been, but that's a 3-day total because the Minnesota Department of Health is not reporting these numbers on a daily basis over the weekend like they were. Still, that being said, it's that number. That's 341 basically per day. 341, 42, 43 cases per day. That's a lot higher than it's been. It's getting bad here. It's not as bad as the rest of the country, particularly Missouri, Arkansas, Texas, Louisiana, the Alabama, Mississippi. They're horrific with the amount of spread. Florida, God, awful. And it's even getting into the Mountain West states. Minnesota's not as bad, but those numbers are not going in the right direction. And there's another number coming up here in a second that's really concerning. As of July 22nd, the state reported 3,136,633 people had received one dose of the vaccine. 2,983,368 people have completed their vaccine series. 53.6% of Minnesotans' children under the age of 12 who are not eligible for the vaccine have completed the vaccine series. It jumps to 63.4% when excluding kids under the age of 12. Minnesota Department of Health, a public dashboard to put track vaccine progress in Minnesota as well. Hospitalizations. Through July 26th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was now up to 168. That's up from 153 reported Monday. Of those hospitalized, 51 people are in intensive care. That number is up dramatically. 117 were receiving non-ICU treatments. Hospital admissions have been rising rather quickly in the past week after hovering around 100 for the first weeks, now rising again as the Delta virus spreads. The 1,032 positive tests on Tuesday update was from 29,728 completed tests. Here's where the numbers go bad. Your test positivity rate now in Minnesota, 3.47. Reminder, I believe we were below 1%. 5% is your we need to start getting very concerned threshold. But we're at 3.7% now on your positivity rate. We are far closer to that 5% than we were. Get vaccinated. Once again, I was reading a story in Missouri. Do you want to know how broken some of these people are? They're putting on disguises because they don't want their family and friends knowing they're getting vaccinated. Now, I'm going to be blunt. I could care less. Knock yourself out. You want to go incognito there, chameleon. Knock yourself out. I could care less. If that's how you need to do it, do it. You don't want to ever say anything to anyone else. I'd hope you'd be an advocate, but you don't have to be. You want to make sure I, liberal progressive radio host Matt McNeil, never finds out about your vaccine? Perfectly fine. I'll never taunt you. I'll never do this. I want to taunt you anyway. My stance has been the same since the beginning. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And I don't want you bankrupt. And if you're too dumb to hear me say that and not understand what I'm saying, I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And I don't want you bankrupt. Well, I can't help you, but if this helps you do it, if you say to yourself, I can't let Matt McNeil know what I'm up to, well, I'm fine. The illusion's there, Clouseau. A hunchback costume, you say. God, still one of my favorite characters ever of any movies is the Pink Panther movies. Love those movies. Anyway, no, I don't care. If you need to do this in private, if you don't want me to ever know, I don't care. Just get it done. Because that's the way you're going to stay safe, and that's the important thing. And staying safe is going to be a key. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reversed course on Tuesday on some masking guidelines, recommending now that even vaccinated people return to wearing masks indoors in parts of the U.S. where the coronavirus is surging. Now, once again, if you go back to these maps that you're seeing right now, that is not necessarily Minnesota, but I am not going to get in the way of this and be counterculture. Wear a mask. Go back. We're going back indoors. Wear a mask. If you were indoor, like I said, when I went to the zoo today, there were a few moments where indeed I was like, you know, I don't feel comfortable with this. There's too many people around. Best to put the mask on. And yeah, I'll tell you what, when that humidity started rising, it was hot and I was sweating like crazy. I didn't care. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And I don't want you bankrupt. It's that simple. So I'm going to put the mask on. And It is about my own safety. It's about my kids' safety. It's about my family's safety. But it also is about your safety to a point, and that's why I'm trying to help out. I can't help you if you don't want to, but at least I can put a mask on. Citing new information about the ability of the Delta variant to spread among vaccinated people, the CDC also recommended indoor masks for all teachers, staff, students, and visitors to schools, regardless of vaccination status. The new guidance follows recent decisions in the Los Angeles and St. Louis to revert to indoor mask mandates amid a spike in COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations that have been especially bad in the South. The country is averaging more than 57,000 cases a day and 24,000 COVID-19 hospitalizations. The new infections in the U.S. continue to be among unvaccinated people, but breakthrough infections are generally causing milder illness can occur in vaccinated people. Once again, I want to be very careful here. The vast majority of people who are dying, the vast majority of people who are being hospitalized, and the vast majority of people who are getting really, really sick are the unvaccinated. A small, tiny percentage are breakthrough. The fact that they keep putting breakthrough cases at the top, kind of, it's not a 50-50 thing. It's not even freaking close at this point. It's the unvaccinated that are the problem. And I kind of get tired of this, oh, well, there's breakthrough. Well, no, there may be a handful, but that's like saying, you know, that things are going wrong for 99.9% of the reason this. I mean, the reason why you are you can't find a girl, swear a lot, and you're really kind of a jerk to people. But as well, one person basically said they don't like your shirt. Well, that's basically then every time says, why can't you find anyone to date? The first thing is, well, his clothes style is off. Well, no, he swears a lot and he's a real jerk to everyone. That's why no one likes him. The clothing choice, that was just one person. But they're not equal. You know, you get my point there? There you go. So the unvaccinated people are the primary problem. But both the Delta variant, the level of viruses infected vaccinated people is indistinguishable from the level of viruses in nose and throat vaccinated people. So it's the same virus, basically. It just is the people that are vaccinated are not getting as sick. Data emerged over the last couple of days from 100 samples. The big concern about unvaccinated is the unvaccinated getting sick, dying, and going bankrupt, okay? And that's a real concern. I mean, once again, you are seeing this rise. And this is why even Republicans are now frantically trying to encourage people in these low vaccinated states to get vaccinated. My concern about people that have had a vaccination is you can have COVID, you might not even know it, and you could pass it on. That's why they're kind of going with a mask for everyone back inside. We'll take a break. Come on back. A little bit more I want to talk about in regards to the Minnesota coronavirus update. And once again, Brett Johnson coming up here. The Jack Rice interview we did earlier that's posted everywhere. SoundCloud, you can go find it. A spotlighted interview for sure. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. By the way, speaking of Greg Bakken, I just got a note from him. Coming up this Sunday show, they're going to be focusing on UFOs. It starts at 4 p.m. on August 1st. Talk with UFO researcher, author Mike Barra. He basically has been on programs like Ancient Aliens, The Unexplained with William Shatner, UFOs Uncovering the Truth Behind the Moon Landing, written many books. He'll be talking about UFOs, about an incident and a report from June. That coming up on Ghost Box Radio, coming up 4 o'clock on August 1st on the Sunday right here on AM 950. Enjoy the great show there. The last bit of news from the Minnesota coronavirus update. Minnesota's most famous health system has become the latest provider to require all its staff to get vaccinated for COVID-19. The Rochester Institution made the announcement, the Mayo Clinic here, on Monday, saying all staff must be fully vaccinated for the virus or complete a declination process by September 17th. While those who choose to decline the vaccine will keep their jobs, they will be required to complete education modules, wear a face mask at all times, and socially distance while on campus. The Mayo Clinic's announcement comes days after South Dakota-based Sanford Health, which is a major presence in western Minnesota, said it would be mandating the vaccine for its staff as the Delta variant of COVID-19 causes cases to skyrocket in parts of the U.S. We are proud of our staff's high vaccination rates, grateful that the vast majority have embraced the opportunity to get vaccinated, said the Mayo Clinic's president and CEO. Our patients can expect a safe when they come back to the Mayo Clinic, we need to do everything we can to protect everybody. You know, one of the things that it just blows my mind, and I've heard a few people, and I'm not the first person to come up with this by any means, but it's one of the things which it puts you into a little bit of repose. When we came up with Sox vaccine for polio, everybody was scrambling to get that vaccine. People didn't fight the – people weren't out there saying, I would rather have my child in an iron lung for the rest of my life than get them a vaccine because they're the – vaccine people, they're in on it. No one did. But if that was today, the same people who are like COVID, it's like I think polio is not as dangerous as the vaccine. Can you think? Imagine the stupidity of this. You know, we are this latest wave. This entire latest wave of COVID-19 is caused by ignorance, intentional, purposeful ignorance. People that think that by not getting vaccinated, we're owning the libs. And the reality is, you know, we're hitting here, sitting there screaming, for God's sakes, I don't want you to die. I don't want you to get sick. I don't want you to be bankrupt. And they basically are like, well, just watch me. And then they get sick. And then they're getting hauled into a hospital. And they're begging the healthcare professionals to get them a vaccine. And they're like, it's too late. You're sick. I'm glad these hospitals are taking this seriously because they're supposed to be – I mean, the entire concept of a hospital is based on the scientific research that has got them to the point in medicine. And I appreciate hospitals taking this stance and basically making this where they're going. I just wish the rest of us would get on board because, let's face it, they're the smart guys when it comes to medicine, and they're saying to do it. That should go a long way for the rest of us. We'll take a break. Come on back. Hour two coming up. Brett Johnson, Patrick Cooligan, and more right here on AM 950. Oh, Jack, full of goodness here. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Hour two on your Tuesday. Brett Johnson, Patrick here, kind enough to join us. You walked outside. Sven Sundgaard said the heat index now is over 100 in Minneapolis, St. Paul, because that humidity level is rising, and tomorrow is going to be brutal.
I just stepped outside after I heard you and Patrick talking about the heat, because, like, Patrick, I haven't been outside since, like, 11 o'clock this morning, and I had two words, oh, and then another one I couldn't say on the radio when I walked outside.
You didn't bike here, did you?
Oh, God, no.
No, thank God.
I am tomorrow, though.
I'll get a tow line for you. I'll take you home. Whee! We'll do it the speedy way. At least you'll get a breeze. You'll be baked like a kiln.
I'll just be an Aquafina bottle by the time I get home with all the sweat.
So I went to the zoo today, and I've got a new outrage. A new outrage, Brett. Dang it!
Uh-oh.
Dang it!
What really grinds your gears today here?
Well, it was actually quite delightful. The zoo is just wonderful. But I got to the Minnesota Trail and got up to the black bears. And I noticed someone had put something in that black bear cage for the bears to enjoy. A hammock. They put a hammock in the black bear exhibit.
It wasn't you, was it?
No, of course not.
Because I know you love hammocks.
They're trying to turn them into hipster bears, man.
Oh.
Why don't you just give them a slack line? Teach them some juggling. Teach them how to make organic honey. What are you doing?
Hipster Winnie the Pooh. I'll take
hipster
that.
Hipster bear. Well, you know, he needs to get some pants. But, I mean, they'll be nice cut pants. I mean, it'll be something, a nice fit, not cargo shorts like I wear all the time. No. You're making hipster bears. Stop it. It was bad enough we got Arby's bear in this town now. They're basically, you know, eating beef and cheddars, which it's a little salty. But now we cannot create hipster bears. Get that hammock out of there. There's no hammock in the wild. It's a branch. Put a tree out there if they want to launch on a tree.
How's a bear going to lay on a hammock?
I can just.
That's going to be a massively. I don't know what material you could build that hammock out of.
He's going to have a turtleneck sweater on, and then, of course, he's going to have a neck tattoo, but you can't see because of the turtleneck. But the guy tried to explain that to a hipster because I just don't get it because I'm an old guy. Hipster bears. Yeah. Well, that, you know, I think I might have to drone in at night and take the hammock out of there. You know, I don't want to give them a gun like the bears up on the Iron Range, up in the Boundary Waters.
Oh, no, not
where they're taking
bears.
The, you know, that's a bad thing, those bears. But maybe you drop off a few beef and cheddars. You know, let the bears have a little fun. We'll take your hammock. We'll give you some beef and cheddars. Go, team, go. The black bears will appreciate that.
Oh, they love those beef and cheddars more than the hammock.
Can you imagine what those bears would be like with the heat tomorrow, taking down a few beef and cheddars?
You eat your beef and cheddar, then you go lay in the hammock.
Well, the mosquitoes aren't around that bad today. Huh? I wonder why. Lord. 952-946-6205. I got a god-awful story I want to touch on here. A Cold Spring family said they have spent months being terrorized by an alleged racist stalker, culminating this past weekend with him placing a chunk of granite on the accelerator of an SUV and guiding it into their home. There is footage on this on bringmethenews.com. Their doorbell camera catches this. And you see this guy behind the truck running into the ditch afterwards. So he's on camera doing this. Brenton Bayer, 32, white guy of Richmond, has been charged with theft, stalking, first-degree damage to property, all felonies, after the incident in the early hours on Saturday. It happened in Stearns County around 5:40, where Andrea Robinson lives with her husband and children. According to the charges, Bayer stopped a stolen SUV in an intersection across the street and then placed a granite, a piece of rock on the gas pedal, sent the vehicle slamming into the Robinsons' home. Inside the SUV was a teddy bear hanging on a noose. This guy's a racist piece of crud. The family's doorbell captured the moment when the Robinsons' children were sleeping on the couch in the room very close to where the vehicle struck. The impact was strong enough to move a parked vehicle in the garage, also causing significant damage to the siding, sheetrock, the roof, as well as the interior and exterior of the property. Robinson told police that she is terrified of Bayer, who is an active harassment restraining order that mandated him from having any contact with the Robinsons for 2 years. You guys are doing a great job keeping that family safe. The restraining orders was issued May 21st. The criminal complaint states that Bayer, who has made 18 calls to Robinson in the past 2 months, in addition to being arrested on July 15th in Waite Park, where he's allegedly to have been following, stalking her. Robinson's business buyer has stalked her and her family for 83 days before being arrested. During those 83 days, she said her vehicle windows were smashed out twice, her doorbell camera shot at. She has received personal threats, and her black husband has been the victim of false 911 calls. The charges do not state that Bayer was responsible for these incidents. Robinson, who is white, says the harassment started after she raised complaints about the racism her children had to deal with in Ricori School District. She spoke at a May 17th school board meeting, and I believe I actually saw the story of this out of the Duluth paper. They had coverage of this. The school board meeting requested the resignation of all school board members who say she failed failed to act after learning of racism within the district. They reached out to the school board for comment. According to Robinson, the racism became overwhelming in December when a group of more than 50 children, this is at Ricori, exchange racist comments on Snapchat group. Robinson said messages to the group included racial epithets, discussions about trees needing ornaments for Christmas, and okay, boys, get the ropes. I don't feel my kids are safe at the school, nor should you. I can't put my kids through what they've been going through for years here. Knowing my children were getting called the N-word at school when they lash out because it's been said for a year my child gets suspended. After the SUV crashed into the Robinsons' home on Saturday, a criminal complaint says Benton ran to a nearby field. You can see him doing it in the camera, the doorbell camera. And this guy's an idiot. He was arrested at 10 a.m. the same day while walking near Alexander Park in Cold Spring. More than $14,000 has been raised to help the Robinsons cover home repairs. The mayor of Cold Spring, though, did have as the school district has failed this family, it sounds like. And it sounds like law enforcement has not been able to keep this guy away from them. Well, they will now. He's going to jail. The mayor actually had a pretty good statement on this on Monday. This is Dave Heinen, H-E-I-N-E-N. The city of Cold Spring vehemently rejects racist behavior in all of its forms. One of the most insidious forms, which is not always visible to the community, is harassment targeting a single community member or a family. Racism is harmful first and foremost to the victims. The damage to the sense of security and peace of mind in their own home is even more significant than the property damage resulting from this incident and will leave them with lasting scars. Racist behavior is harmful to our whole community as well. It is not right and it is not welcome here. I want to strongly reiterate that the city of Cold Spring does not tolerate racism in any form. We strive to be a welcoming community for all persons, no matter race, color, ethnic, religion, gender identification, age, ability, place of origin, citizenship status, or veteran status, and will continue to promote this community's values. That's actually a good statement because it includes everything in there, which I think is important. But dear Lord, I mean, how does this get that bad?
That's unbelievable. And
the video, there's some pictures. Croman, 11's political guy, on his Twitter feed. Take a look at that picture. There's a picture of him with the guy on his front porch. The damage this guy did to this house with his car is unbelievable. And we're lucky no one got killed. But this guy, he seems to be clearly at the point to kill these people. And at what point do those stalker laws kick in to where you say, for the betterment of the community, you're not coming out?
You got to reach that point now, I would think. This guy shouldn't be released anytime soon. I mean, what do you say, 18 calls? Among other things.
Quite a
car
few
car windows being smashed, false police reports against the husband.
And it doesn't – and we can't necessarily attribute these to this guy. 18 calls to Robinson in the past 2 months. You can't necessarily attribute it to this guy because they don't have evidence of it. But they definitely got the evidence of this guy doing this now. And, you know, and he, you should see he's got sad – he's the victim now. He's got sad guy face now that he's got a booking photo.
Surprisingly, it seemed like he was arrested without incident. They didn't shoot or tase him or anything.
Funny story. Yeah, guy that used a car as a weapon. That's a great point, Brett. Guy that used a car as a weapon to try to kill some people. Funny story. He was, hey, buddy, come on over here. We have to have a little chat with you.
Only they treated Winston Boogie Smith the same way. I mean, they're looking for a suspect. He was shot. Same thing. They're looking for a suspect in this case in Cold Spring. He was arrested without incident, booked peacefully in jail.
Tammy Lou yesterday.
Oh, Tammy Lou.
Tammy Lou over the state capitol. You know, my God, it's just, it is amazing that all of a sudden that white guy comes on out and they could actually be someone who tried to kill somebody. And it's like, hey, let's have a talk, will you? Come on, let's get to this. You know, oh, you've got a misdemeanor charge that we have to get figured out? Get my gun. I mean, dear Lord, the standard, the two differences here are just unbelievable. Patrick Cooligan, Minnesota Reformer, one of our favorite guests. We have him on usually on Tuesdays. What are you guys talking about today?
Mostly COVID today, talking about the new guidelines that were put in place and how 14 Minnesota counties are apparently going to be under those guidelines where people should be masking. But unfortunately, if you look at the political makeup of those counties, I wouldn't hold my breath on that actually happening. So we're talking through that and a few other local stories as well.
Hey, but good news, we all get to wait for them to say, we need help because we got sick and we lost a lot of money. Oh, sure. Yeah, then now all of a sudden you're victims. Now all of a sudden you need help. All right, Patrick Cooligan, Minnesota Reformer with Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson back with you here on the Matt McNeil Show. It's time for our usual Tuesday interview with Patrick Cooligan. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. For the latest in Minnesota political news, make sure you log on to MinnesotaReformer.com as we have a number of stories that we'll be talking through this afternoon. Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Good to be here, as always.
Yeah, so I want to start off with the big breaking news that we have with the CDC is they have somewhat reversed course on whether masking should be required indoors. Basically, what they've said is that it kind of depends on which county you live in and whether we are having COVID outbreaks, as I understand it, in those counties. So it's a little bit more of a piecemeal approach than saying that everyone indoors needs to wear a mask. It really depends on which area you're living in. So, Patrick, just want to get your reaction to that news from the CDC and how it might impact things here in Minnesota, since I imagine we do have more than a few counties that probably do fall into that CDC guidance of recommending indoor mask wearing.
Yeah, forgive me because I'm learning about this just now as well. And from what I gather, one of my colleagues is reporting that there would be 14 counties in Minnesota that would require indoor masking. And that is based on their high rates of COVID infection, which correspond almost perfectly with low rates of vaccination. And you know, I'm interested to see what kind of public health experts will say about the CDC. I think in general, there's been a lot of criticism of the CDC for these shifting guidance, unclear guidance, and guidance that hasn't always been agreed with by other folks in public health. I just think, to begin with, I think what we've come to know is that people in some geographic areas, as it happens, it correlates perfectly with Trump areas, never thought that COVID was a very serious threat. And they also rejected all the restrictions. And as a result, they wound up with high rates of infection. They also were very hesitant or skeptical of vaccines. And so I'm not really sure why areas where you've got high infection rates and thus high hospitalization rates low vaccination rates, why all of a sudden those people are going to turn around and start wearing masks?
Yeah.
And it just seems unlikely to me. Now, I understand it'd be almost irresponsible for the government not to take some action, given this kind of fourth wave that we're in now. But part of me just kind of wants to throw up his hands and say, you know what, this is up to you. I mean, if you want to go and get yourself infected and get sick, I don't know what to tell you anymore, because we have the vaccines. We know it keeps people safe. I know that can sound callous, and I don't want to sound that way or different, because there are people who are immunocompromised. There are people with significant disabilities. It's unfair that they should be exposed in this way. And the same is true, of course, of healthcare workers who, even if they're vaccinated and they keep very safe, they shouldn't have to deal with the constant trauma of yet another COVID wave. But it does feel at a certain point, you just have to wonder, well, what government action is actually going to make a difference, given what we've seen so far?
Yeah, and the CDC really didn't want to have to go back and make this push. I imagine they were kind of hoping things were behind us in terms of requiring masks, but their hand was kind of forced on this with the unvaccinated people just choosing not to take a vaccine. And I think we've seen more and more news articles about this, how people who are vaccinated are generally getting fed up with people who aren't vaccinated, since it seems like those who are vaccinated are having to take these different measures because people are being irresponsible with their decision making. And I think even some Republicans are kind of getting fed up with it too. You and I were talking a little bit off air, at least from the political perspective. It is interesting that a number of Republican, very prominent Republican officials are all of a sudden now pushing for vaccination, saying, oh, it's important to make sure you get your vaccine and they are safe and we believe in the science. I'm thinking about politicians like, the Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson making a push. Even Sean Hannity is saying, get vaccinated. So it has been interesting to see how even some members of the Republican establishment are getting a little fed up with people who are unvaccinated right now.
Right. Mitch McConnell was another last week came out. The governor of Alabama as well. I don't recall her name offhand. She said it's time to start blaming people who are not vaccinated. As has been said, it's great that they've come along on this. But it's kind of like, well, where were you 6 months ago, when we really needed you to be out in front on this? And I guess it took another wave in very Republican parts of the country and these rural hospitals getting overrun and those ICU beds left available and this kind of thing. They finally, I'm sure, were getting all kinds of phone calls, urgent phone calls from their healthcare allies, healthcare industry allies, saying you've got to help us out here. So we've seen some progress on this front. We'll see whether or not they listen. There was another big piece in Politico I saw this morning from the Lake of the Ozarks, and people there just don't care. They don't believe in that COVID is serious. But they do think that there's a risk of taking a vaccine. And so they're just behaving as if it's not a threat at all. And, I mean, just Lake of the Ozarks, I think, is one of the biggest vacation spots in the entire central part of America the middle swath of America. And, I mean, I think it's just one super spreader event there after another, I imagine.
Yeah, didn't they almost 1 year to the day write the exact same article last year about how there were people showing up maskless and really taking no precautions whatsoever? I think that was Lake of the Ozarks last year as well, where Politico wrote it, or it might not have been a Politico, but that was also in the national news about, yeah, them not taking any precautions. And yeah, I had a chance to read that this morning too, and it's just the recklessness that's being displayed over there. It's a completely different world, and as you said, it probably is going to be we probably are going to have more super spreader events from those types of areas. So encourage people to check that out too. It's some of the quotes in there are pretty shocking to read, as it's outright vaccine hostility and hostility towards mask wearing, where people who are showing up at the Ozarks wearing masks are kind of getting harassed. So, yeah, I encourage people to check that out that Patrick and I are talking about.
Right. There's a woman that who's talks about she has is in a she wears a mask, and she talks about getting yelled at in a Walmart. It's just wild. But this is the America we live in, I guess.
Yeah, completely. Hey, sticking along the COVID lines, this is a story you guys printed in the Minnesota Reformer today, even though it is from Missouri. It's something that was it was a story from Taylor Hirth. She is a parent of a 7-year-old girl in Missouri, and she actually enrolled her 7-year-old daughter into vaccine trials for the Pfizer vaccine to see if that could eventually be made available to children under the age of 12. And glad you guys were able to run that story, because so often whenever we're reading about COVID in the news, we're generally only kind of getting the headlines or reading about breakthrough infections, which are very rare. So glad you pointed this out, or glad you printed this and also talked about how Hirth brought up a number of reasons why she's enrolling her daughter in these vaccine trials. So definitely glad you guys were able to run that one, and encourage people to check that out too.
Yeah, I mean, she makes the argument is, you say you don't trust the government, or you don't trust the scientists who developed this technology, which, by the way, isn't particularly new or novel. But what's really not trustworthy is the vaccine itself, and it's shown itself to be incredibly insidious. I definitely appreciated the writer's courage, not just in and she says in the piece that she got consent insofar as you can from her daughter, but her daughter wanted to help, and but also her courage in just writing this, and we need this the vaccine for children, because it would really help as we send kids back to school in the fall.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we don't have a lot of guidance right now, at least here in the state, in terms of whether kids should be masked or not. As I know in another piece in the Minnesota Reformer, you guys had a chance to speak to Jan Mulcam with the Minnesota Department of Health, and she was talking about how, well, we're kind of still awaiting guidance from the federal government in terms of what we do about masking for kids in school or having vaccinations for kids under the age of 12 as well.
Yeah, Commissioner Malcolm said a couple of interesting things. One is kind of the lead quote is that this is not over. Mm-hmm. So please get vaccinated and please be careful. And then also, yeah, that they are ready for booster shots or for getting vaccinations to children. But we just don't know yet. So it's really incumbent upon the FDA to move this along as quickly as possible in a manner that is still safe.
Speaking with Patrick Houlihan, he is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. For the latest in Minnesota politics, make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com. Do want to go to a couple political stories before we have to wrap things up. And the first one I want to touch on is the fact that those that are especially seeking health care on the market could be seeing some higher rates this year, as a number of providers, including UCare, Health Partners, and Medicare, are going to be having double-digit increases on their rates this year, which has led to Minnesota Senate Republicans in the legislature encouraging lawmakers to extend our reinsurance program in Minnesota. Now, what the reinsurance program does is it uses tax dollars to reimburse insurance providers for high-cost insurance claims, which allows them, in turn, the insurance companies, to keep their rates lower. Now, what I found really interesting about this, Patrick, is that it's actually Republicans who are pushing for this reinsurance program to make sure these rates stay low. So I just found that interesting, since normally I would think it would be Democrats making that push. So kind of an interesting dynamic at the legislature right now with these rates increasing and Republicans pushing to extend the reinsurance program beyond just the 1 year I believe is left on it.
Right. Republicans have helped craft this policy back in 2017, and insofar as really subsidizing people's health insurance, maybe that does seem surprising from an ideological perspective. But just if you think about the types of people who are on the individual market, it's a lot of farmers and entrepreneurs, people who own their own companies, so those, I mean, those are Republicans, most of them. And a few years ago, the rates were really, market was completely out of control for some things that, I mean, it's kind of a long story. I think that Republicans should share some blame in trying to sabotage the Obamacare law. But in any case, there were these people who buy their insurance. It's a fairly small number, but not insignificant. Their rates were going up, and so reinsurance helped to stabilize the market. I think Republicans also see reinsurance as a way to kind of save the private health insurance market from itself. So, there's a point at which there's probably public pressure against private health insurance would be so great we would move toward a single payer system, and Republicans hate that idea. So by subsidizing these claims and by helping the private insurance companies pay these claims, they can help save the private insurance industry.
Well, what's interesting about the dynamic of this, too, is if I remember correctly, at least at the national level from, I think this might have been in like 2014 or 15, this similar reinsurance program existed at the federal level where insurance companies would be reimbursed for these high cost insurance claims. And it was actually Republicans at the national level led by Marco Rubio who led to the defunding of that program. So I just find that kind of interesting that at the national level, Republicans largely got rid of that reinsurance while at the state level, they're on board with supporting it. So not putting you on the spot there, but I could have sworn that happened a few years ago with Marco Rubio when they tried to defund this similar program, at least at the national level.
You're right. At the federal level, they saw this as a way to undermine Obamacare, and they were right. At the local level, the Republicans here were hearing from their constituents, Republican constituents in particular, who were on that individual market, who were desperate for help.
All right, final story here for you, Patrick, and got to talk about this news conference that happened yesterday with DFL State Representative John Thompson. He was giving a news conference, in front of the Capitol, talking about some of the domestic abuse allegations that are against him, among the many other issues he's encountered right now. And during that press conference, a white woman in a car with a Donald Trump flag ended up driving on the Capitol lawn and basically doing donuts. And she was not immediately taken into custody like would probably normally happen if this were a person of color that were out there doing this. She was remained at large for at least a little while until she was finally arrested by authorities. But I think Thompson and his supporters correctly pointed out that this is a perfect example of white privilege that happened yesterday with Tammy Jo Jeka. She was the person who was driving the car with the Trump flag, as Thompson and his supporters were talking about, yeah, if this were a person of color, they would have been arrested right away and possibly even had worse actions done to them in terms of maybe even tased or shot. So while Thompson still certainly does have major issues to work through, I think his campaign and his supporters brought up a good point that this is a pretty clear double standard on white privilege when this driver of this Trump car was not arrested right away by authorities.
Yeah, a bit of a circus atmosphere yesterday. One of our reporters asked if she should go to this press conference. I said, no, I don't, we're not going to follow that day to day. But sure. So we were watching the live stream and this woman pulled up on the kind of concrete runway up to the Capitol. You just don't see that other than a Capitol police officer. Mm-hmm. And then she drives off, and then she's doing donuts, as you say, on the Capitol campus. I mean, it was just quite a scene. And there's a Trump flag. She seems to be suffering some kind of I don't want to diagnose anyone, but she seemed to be having some troubles, put it that way. And sure enough, I mean, she's making the point for John Thompson right there that, she was treated humanely and compassionately. And if she were a black man or a black woman, almost certainly the outcome would have been different. There would have been ripped her out of the car and been on her stomach while they handcuffed her and so forth. And that's not what happened to her. She did Thompson quite a favor as he continues with his his adversity that he's getting through. I think from his perspective, having people talk on his behalf, especially black women, was really important and effective because, of course, there are police reports from between 2000 and the aughts where he has been accused of really considerable domestic violence, although he was never charged with domestic violence. So that situation appears, he says he's not going to resign, and that appears to be we're just kind of paralyzed with that situation as it is right now. I talked to DFL operatives who certainly wish it would go away, but it doesn't appear that it's going to. So we'll just have to wait for next steps in that story.
And final question for you. I lied before. This is actually my final question, but give us a little preview on what's coming up this week on Minnesota Reformer Radio, of course, the great podcast that is released every Friday, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts, or also broadcast on AM 950 every Sunday at 12:30. Tell us a little bit about what people can expect on this week's episode of Reformer Radio.
Well, as you know, things can change, but for right now, our plan is hope to have a great episode with a woman who had struggled with addiction, and she had her children taken away as a result of that. But she got into recovery, and she got her children back, and now she works with people on their own recovery. And so she's going to tell us her story and talk about substance abuse and substance use disorder policies and how we can improve substance disorder treatment in Minnesota.
Well, we'll have to make sure we check that out. Again, find that wherever you get your podcast as it drops on Friday. Also listen on the airwaves, AM 950 radio, Sundays at 12:30. That is Patrick Houlihan of the Minnesota Reformer, editor-in-chief. For the latest in Minnesota political news, make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com. Patrick, thanks again for the time today.
Always a pleasure, Brett.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil up next on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thank you very much to Patrick Houlihan over at Minnesota Reformer. If you are not following the Minnesota Reformer wrong, thanks to Brett Johnson as well for stopping on. And always nice to have Brett come on, Bonna. I like doing shows with him. We need to do a show, just me and Brett, the entire show, man. And I don't know how serious of topics we'll get into, because we have a tendency of kind of starting riffing off each other and cracking more jokes than anything else. But you know what? Maybe we need to do a joke show one day. Get Beryl in here, too. We'll get Beryl and Brett and myself, and we'll do it. I like that idea. I do like that idea. 952-946-6205. I want to bring up two stories, if I can, about coronavirus that kind of broke since we've been on the air. New federal guidelines in response to the variant-driven wave of COVID-19 recommendations, mask wearing by people regardless of their vaccination status. In Minnesota, 14 Minnesota counties with higher substantial transmission rates. So their guidance is basically saying in these 14 counties to do this. I don't know if they're going to do this, but the federal guidelines are saying you probably want to, especially since these counties are having some issues. Scott County is the only metro area county that has got an issue. The CDC advises mask wearing in counties with 7-day average transmission rates at or above 50 infections per 100,000 people. Scott County is the only one in the metro that comes close to that. The other 13 counties, well, yeah, as you can expect, are generally in Republican areas where there's either been an outright there'll be either an outright dismissal of the vaccine, saying they don't work, or they've just said, you know, don't do it. Liberals win if you stay healthy. I can't figure that one out. You guys are just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, man. Anyway, the other counties, Lake of the Woods, Redwood, Wilkin, Cottonwood, Dodge, Isanti, Mille Lacs, Pope, Roseau, Swift, Traverse, and Waseca are the other counties that have had problems with this, which is brings up an interesting point, because as the ever fantastic Sally Jo Sorensen over at Blue Stem Prairie, and if you're not following Blue Stem Prairie, That is one of the best outstate news sources in the freaking state. It might be the best one. Absolutely outstanding. Blue Stem Prairie does a great job. The Farm Fest is coming up in Redwood County, and that's part of this list. And that's going to be August 3rd through 5th in Redwood County. Not exactly a liberal hotbed, Redwood County. not exactly a place for rational argument. Now, Farm Bureau, I think, runs Farm Fest. My guess is Farm Bureau is going to be taking it seriously. But if people go, you ain't going to make me wear no mask. Government can stay out of my life. Now, where's my farm check? Now, you know, we can already do the joke. You know, it's been a joke we've done a lot. But we'll have to see how Farm Fest does that. Oh, that's right. Yeah, the Redwood County, that might not go. Lake County, that's one of the counties up in the Arrowhead, right?
Yep, Two Harbors, that area.
So it's the one between Cook and St. Louis, okay, right? And that, so I'm wondering if that's touristy, if that's a tourist thing, that the tourists are going up there and being on the North Shore, and that's where they're having the problem, because I just read a story about a major outbreak out in Cape Cod that they had around the 4th of July with tourists going out there.
Yeah, that would definitely be the case. That's where Gooseberry Falls and Split
That's right.
Rock are.
That's right. Well, wow. Be careful, people. You know, if you get into crisis, there's nothing wrong with throwing a mask in your pocket. And all of a sudden you go into a building and say, hey, there's no one in here. Great. I don't have to wear a mask. But then there's also nothing wrong with going out there and saying, hey, there's a ton of people in here. Where's my mask? So there's the other one. That's one story. The 14 counties there, including Redwood County. Once again, Sally Jo Sorensen, Blue Stem Prairie. I'm presuming they're coming up here in a little bit. I did want to mention this, too. Contrary to myths circulating on social media, COVID-19 vaccines do not cause erectile dysfunction or male infertility. So once again, the vaccines, they've done some research. They do not cause any kind of erectile dysfunction or male infertility. But what is true, coronavirus, the virus that causes COVID-19, actually does cause a risk for both disorders. So, until now, little research has been done on how the virus or the vaccines affect the male reproductive system. But recent investigations by physicians and researchers at the University of Miami have shed new light on the questions. Of course, it's Miami. The team, which includes, has discovered potentially far-reaching implications for men of all ages, including younger and middle-aged men. So basically what the story is this. If you're one of these people that's refusing to get vaccinated because you say to yourself, I want to be able to have relations. Well, funny story, you're much more likely to have relations if you get vaccinated if you don't. But hey, you want to be sick or dead or bankrupt for the rest of your life and impotent? Well, bon appetit. By the way, just for everybody out there, I've been vaccinated. Hi, how you doing? 952-946-6205. I never realized my vaccination status would actually be, hey, you got both holes punched on your card? Well, let me tell you what I can do.
Maybe I should be playing some music underneath this discussion.
You know, maybe a circus theme, okay, a little calliope music. Okay.
That's not what I was thinking.
Well, okay, but I will think it because we're going to go to Mike Lindell right now. I can't do that joke. Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, CEO Mike Lindell. I don't know if you're aware of this, Patrick, but big news coming. Sasquatch, it might be on next week's episode. He has speculated this week that Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris will resign their positions August 13th. Very specific. I mean, as a guy that doesn't seem to have any inroads with the Democratic president, I would kind of surprised he has such authority to be able to say such a, this is coming up on his day planner. Lindell Toro told Real American Voice host Steve Bannon, human skin tag, that he came to this conclusion after speaking with three Democrats who regretted voting for Biden. The MyPillow CEO claimed that he had convinced the Biden voters that the 2020 election had been stolen from former President Donald Trump. Now, okay, let me just say, okay, and I'm very skeptical about this, Mikey. Let me say I buy your story that you actually did talk to three Democrats who regretted voting for Biden. These just people in Minnesota, or are they at just some event? And because I can tell you what, if you want some people who have a voter regret, dear Lord, do I know a lot of people who've regretted voting for Trump? Oh, my God. I'm at least a few hundred, not three. But sure, we'll go with that. You know, I talk to Democrats and to liberals, too, and they see bad things that are going on, Lindell said, recalling a speech he recently gave in New Hampshire. There are a lot of people there that had regrets and they wish they had known more before they voted. Okay. There's three of them, three New Hampshire Democrats. That's the tipping scale. That was it, wasn't it? The three people in New Hampshire. There are three of them that voted for Biden and feel terrible about it, he continued. I said, you know what? I said, you didn't know about this, but you thought you were voting for something. I said, you didn't get to vote. I said, China did our vote. Lindell once again vowed to show evidence proving the election was stolen by Cyber Symposium event scheduled for August 10th through the 12th. It gives me hope that even your Democrats, they're seeing now firsthand what government can do and how bad social and communism can be, he remarked. When we get through this and the Supreme Court pulls down his election, like I've been telling everybody, when they do this, it's going to be great, uniting, and it gives me hope. Wow. That is some... We hear a rustling in the bushes. Could that be Sasquatch? We don't know. We'll have to wait and see next week's episode. Once we have this symposium, we are now... How are the pathways for Donald Trump coming back, Lindell said. The first one would be, once we have the symposium, by the night of the 12th or the morning of the 13th, if everyone has seen it, including the administration that's in there now that didn't win, maybe you know, Biden and Harris would say, hey, we're here to protect the country and resign. Well, first of all, where does he broadcast these things from? Because even Newsmax and OAN do not want to touch him with a 10-foot pole because that makes them liable for lawsuits. So he broadcasts this on some sort of streaming service. The one time I tried to pull it up, it didn't pull it up at all. So you say that everyone's going to watch it. Okay, I don't know if that's going to happen, sir. But he added, after saying that after Biden and Harris saw that even though they fairly won the election of 2020, that Lindell's evidence. Oh, is that Sasquatch over there? We'll have to see in next week's episode if that was really a Sasquatch. Lindell's evidence will basically convince them to resign. He says, I'm serious. If you have any more character about you, we're all in this together. And this was an attack, and you're going to see this at the symposium. Lindell has previously suggested the 2020 election would be invalidated by the U.S. Supreme Court on August 13th. So now, okay, on the 13th, I mean, this 13th, that's a Friday coming up here in 2 weeks. I mean, 2 weeks from this upcoming Friday. It's going to be a huge day. Huge day. Supreme Court's going to overturn a major election 8 months after the election, 9 months after the election. Yeah, 10 months after the election. 10 months after the election. You're going to have Biden and Harris resign. By the way, one slight little hitch to your problem. The line of secession is actually pretty clear. We actually have solved this problem. If the president and the vice president are not able to fulfill their roles as president and vice president, the Speaker of the House becomes the president of the United States. That's the line of secession. It's pretty clear. So, Mike, I hate to point this out to you, but you're saying that on August 13th, we're going to have President Nancy Pelosi. Because the last I checked, Donald Trump is no longer in the chain of command of the president. Or is this that thing that you guys were putting forward that was suggesting the Congressional Black Caucus was going to side with the Republican Party and replace Nancy Pelosi with Donald Trump as Speaker, which you can place, anybody can be Speaker of the House. I could become Speaker of the House. Patrick could become Speaker of the House. You just got to be voted in by the House. You don't have to be a sitting congressman. So are you suggesting that the Congressional Black Caucus is going to to vote with the Republicans and install Trump as the speaker prior to this moment. It is going to be a busy, wacky, wacky next few weeks if Mike Lindell's world exists. But the reality is this, reminder, we don't know what just happened in the woods, but next week we're going to have evidence. Could that have been a Sasquatch? Probably not, but you're all suckers and we'll keep dragging you along until you realize these shows are never going to show you a Sasquatch. They're just not going to do it. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back one more segment before Native Roots Radio comes in at the 6 o'clock hour. Make sure you're staying with us through the evening right here on AM 950. The progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Oh, Mike, I'm going to be actually on vacation for a few days coming up here. I'm going to actually call in on that monumental day. I'm going to do a segment that day, Patrick. Call in with, I believe Brett's going to be doing the show that day. And we're going to talk about what is clearly going to be one of the biggest days in the history of this country. Top five of all time. Supreme Court ruling, mandatory resignations, the Congressional Black Caucus installing Trump as Speaker of the House. It is going to be a hoot, and I'll be ready to party it up in the new America. I don't think that's going to happen. And by the way, I'll have an update on was that really a Sasquatch. I'll just let you know. It could have been. We don't know. Have to watch next week's episode. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Final thing, a slew of new laws will take effect starting on Sunday, August 1st. Here are some compiled by the nonpartisan House of Representatives Research Office. The Healthy Start Act, pregnant inmates will be able to receive conditional release for up to a year after giving birth, as well as inmates who give birth within 8 months of the due date of being incarcerated. Inmates can also be conditionally released for the duration of the pregnancy and up to 1 year after giving birth. That's not a bad idea. I don't think raising babies in prisons is a good thing. Hospice workers will be required to be notified if a registered predatory offender is in their care. Okay, how is that not already a law? Hospice workers will be required to be notified if a registered predatory offender is in their care. Wow. Doesn't mean they don't have to give care for them, but I think, yeah. Minnesota police can now enforce Canadian orders for protection. Individuals with Canadian orders for protection could register those orders with the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which would make those records available to law enforcement agencies in the state. Registration is not required, and the order would still be enforced. So that's good. I would make an argument if there's a Canadian who has an order for protection. I'm guessing that's the term they use up there. That the fact that they can come to Minnesota and not have to worry about coming against a stalker or predatory offender once they cross the border. I had a stalker years ago. Oh, very uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable. I can understand that quite a bit. So that's good. An insurer cannot cancel, change, or deny a life insurance policy for a Minnesotan with a prescription for Naloxone. Naloxone, an opiate antagonist sold under the brand Narcan. Oh, it's Narcan. As well as other labels. Naloxone is used for doses. So you cannot basically cancel or deny a life insurance policy if someone is using this drug to reduce an overdose. And then the other one, banks and other financial institutions can charge service fees up to $10 for bad checks, up from $4 previously. Let me make sure everyone out there just heard what I just said, because I guarantee you at 12:01 on August 1st, these banks are going to have this in place. Banks and other financial institutions can charge service fees up to $10 for a bad check, up from $4 previously, which once again brings up the point. If they were writing a bad check in the first place, do you think charging them an additional 10 and making things even worse is going to make that situation better? Or do you think that basically that's a punitive punishment just because you're poor and we're going to punish you because you're poor? Needless to say, I disagree with that one. But some other ones, not that bad. Native Roots Radio up next. You have a good one. We're back with Stein tomorrow. Until then, see ya.